Welcome back to State of Leaf Radio. I'm Paul Rauschenbusch. My guest is journalist and author Catherine Stewart. You know, in the midterms, there was a narrative that Christian nationalists did not do as well as was feared. And, you know, many of us kind of went, okay. And, you know, Christian nationalists goes along with election deniers. And some of the people who are the most anti-democratic or overtly did not fare too well. I'm curious, like, how do you read that? Do you breathe a sigh of relief or are you
I think we dodged a bullet, but it grazed our cheek. I mean, some folks like Mastriano did not win their elections in Kerry Lake. Others handily won their elections. I think about Vance. I think about Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think about DeSantis. So, so I don't think that, I think breathing a sigh of relief is certainly premature.
Right. One of the things that just puzzles me is a reading of history that really ignores a lot of just, I hate to say facts, but it is facts. Like my sense is if the founding fathers wanted this to be a Christian nation, that was the most logical thing for them to do, was just to make a Protestant nation. You know, I mean, because that was the model that everyone used, or at least coming from Europe, that was the model. And so, like, I'm just curious. And then you read, like, George Washington's letter to the Hebrew congregation in Newport, Rhode Island.
Oh, there's so many texts. You can read Madison. You can read Jefferson. Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing about it is our founders, you know, proudly and self-consciously created the world's first secular republic. And they did so very self-consciously, and they told us they were doing as they were doing it. And but this history, and of course they were from diverse faith backgrounds. Many of them were deists, which was considered a kind of heresy in their time. It was they sort of endorsed a kind of natural order of things, which was not like sort of theistic order of things by any means, but our country was founded to serve, you know, of the people, by the people, and for the people, not to serve any kind of pope or any religious purpose. So this is one of the reasons why people like David Barton, the movement's, you know, one of the key myth makers of the Christian nationalist movement, who was very politically influential, has become so important. His sort of, I would say, frankly, fake reading of history, his pseudo-history, has been debunked over and over and over by academic historians, but it's done nothing to slow his career because it's not true. The movement leaders know that they need to sort of, in order to sort of take this country in a completely radical direction, they need to, sideline accurate history. And so they need...
I mean, that's... Martin. Yeah, it's creating a myth that you can just... I mean, not in the good sense, but just in the sense of like, oh, you know, let's put together some words and say this is how it went down, and just ignoring actually, like, that's one of the things that they got right, you know? There's plenty they got wrong, but they got this right. And the idea, also, there were many non-believers at the founding of our country. It wasn't it wasn't just all these, like, you know, pilgrims or whatever, you know?
And so there were it's some just very religious people as well. But what they did is they very self-consciously created a religion with a separation of religion and government. And this was never applied perfectly, of course. And our country has gone through a lot of different shifts. We've had different religious movements arise, like the Great Awakenings, and we've had other religious movements arise, like the social gospel. We've always had, but the separation of church and state is, it's not just for atheists. It served our country very well, and our religious movements very well since our founding. The reason we have such a sort of vibrant and diverse religious landscape is precisely because we've had a separation of church and state.
Exactly. I mean, you know, this is like the, so it's just really important. So we have that founding, and yet here we have this throughout it. There have, my guess, and this is where I actually, as a historian, correct me, there have been movements that may not have called themselves Christian nationalists, but felt empowered by that idea. I mean, certainly the Ku Klux Klan did. You know, they felt like they were owning this country in a certain way. There are probably other examples. I mean, this is, where does Christian nationalism 2023 fit into the trajectory of this kind of impulse of theocracy or power grab in the name of religion?
Well, what's really interesting is when you're talking about groups like the, you know, sort of white nationalist groups or the groups like the, I think about the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and some of those militia movements, for some of them were not particularly religious for a long time, but they have adopted the language of Christian nationalism in recent years. I'm thinking about the Proud Boys specifically here because it's become very useful to them. It's a way of sort of getting everybody giving the kind of ideological bolstering for their activity. And others are very, have adopted the sort of language and framework of Christian nationalism because it sort of conforms to their anti-government, that conforms to their kind of anti-government attitude.
Yeah. Where does Christian nationalism fit in our conversation today about anti-Semitism?
Wow. Well, again, it's about who gets to properly belong in the nation and who doesn't. And if you're not a certain type of Christian, you can be here with, you know, at the largesse of the true Americans. But it really is a kind of, again, exclusionary nationalism. Now, that's not to say that there's been, you know, sometimes you'll hear leaders talk about Judeo-Christian nation, which gives, in a way, the appearance of diversity to their movement in the terms kind of toleration. And when you go to a lot of the conferences, often they'll talk about the importance of Israel, which, of course, in some among some of them plays, their state of Israel plays a really important role in their sort of idea of the end times. So it's complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated.
But then you hear a lot of threats, like you've got to be the right kind of Jews. You better be, you know, one who supports us rather than you better watch out. I mean, there's a sort of a threat built into some of that.
Oh, my God. I mean, even Donald Trump did this, like, you know, you have to make sure you're appreciative of what I did and be the right kind of Jew. And I mean, it's just, I think it is very much in this Christian nationalist.
It's sort of the same way in some ways about the issue of ethnicity. Like the movement does a lot of outreach to conservative leaning pastors of color, because they know that if you get the pastors, you can get some subsection of their congregants to vote for you. So they draw a lot of their like Black pastors and especially Latino pastors into these networks like Watchmen on the Wall or Faith Wins or Ministros Hispanos, which is of South Florida network of Hispanic and Latino pastors, many of whom are actually Pentecostal or charismatic and more conservative leaning, and they work with them and, you know, try and deliver to them the tools to show them the biblical issues that should matter in election cycles, and here's how to communicate that to your congregants. But it's not to say that there isn't a lot of sort of racism embedded in the movement. They're certainly going to make room for a pastor of color or a person of color if they sort of conform to a particular type of, let's say, political agenda. And they do, you know, they really want to draw, they want to expand their membership. They know that they're losing this sort of older white folk who have formed their base for a long time. And we've seen the consequences in the last election. So between 2016 and 2020, the Latino vote overall shifted, I believe it's 8 points in favor of Trump. And part of that has to do with outreach to Latino pastors, the establishment of right-wing Latino-focused radio, and other types of initiatives. When I did a piece not too long ago about the shifting Latino vote, and I was following some Facebook pages that target, you know, Latino populations in different states, and there's the infusion of sort of right-wing religious rhetoric, and even into some of these Facebook pages where people are going to find and they're Spanish language pages, and they're going there to find, you know, work or community events or things like that. And all of a sudden you see a post that's all about how abortion is, you know, demonic and things like that. So there's just been a very kind of aggressive outreach in these different ways.
Catherine Stewart is the best-selling author of The Power Worshippers, Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism. Her writing appears in the New York Times, The New Republic, and many other places. Thank you again for joining us here on State of Belief, and thank you for all the work that you are doing.
And thank you so much for the work you do. Glad to be in this rabbit hole with you.
We need to take another break. But up next, Diana Butler Bass on true freedom, community, and much more. If you miss any part of today's program, you can hear full episodes of State of Belief anytime on our website. You'll also find links to the topics we discussed this week, extended interviews and transcripts, and an archive of past shows, all on stateofbelief.com. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, made for such a time as this.